Jesus said, "No one can serve two masters. He will either hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Therefore, I say, do not be anxious for your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, or for the body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food? Is not the body more than clothing?" This morning I wanted to ask you a few questions. One of them being, are you happy? Are you content? Are you satisfied with your life? How do you define contentment? How do you define satisfaction? Is it wrapped up in the things that you have? Is it wrapped up in the circumstances of your life, the relationships that you enjoy? As a culture, we have developed for ourselves a new kind of fear. I think it's a fear that's been around for a long time, but we've now given it a label. We've now assigned it a hashtag, so that means it's a real thing. It is the fear of missing out. Where we look around at our friends and our neighbors and we see all the things that they're doing. We log into Facebook and we sign on to Instagram and we see paraded before our eyes the perfect lives of all of those around us. Their perfect children, their perfect vacations, their perfect homes, their perfect food. And we start to look at ourselves and say, I don't have that. That's not me. I'm lacking in some way. I'm missing out on something. And if only I had that one thing, whatever it is, fill in the blank. If only I had that one thing, then, oh then, would I truly be happy. If experience tells us anything, though, we all understand that that is the furthest from the case. When we do finally attain that next thing that we were wanting so much, it only ceases to quell that desire, and then we want the next thing. I'll tell a story about Sherilyn here. A couple years back, we got her a car. This was the car of her dreams, the car that she had been pining away for so long, and we bought her that car. And she loved that car as if it were her own. We were leasing it, so it wasn't her own, but she loved that car. And one time, she comes out of the grocery store and finds a ding in the side of the car. And that sense of satisfaction and contentment that she had for that car was like it never existed at all. Because she was no longer content with the car. She couldn't look at the car and see how functional it was and see how amazing it was to drive and how beautiful it was. All she could see was the ding. And isn't that what we do in life? With lots of things. We pine away for the life that we do not have. And that is exactly what Jesus is talking about in this story as he talks about it in the Sermon on the Mount. Life is not about what we have. Life is not about the things that we acquire for ourselves. We can't serve God and money at the same time. Let's not worry so much about life. But how do you define contentment? And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. Finding contentment in good times, finding contentment in bad times. And if this resonates with you, if you are the kind of person who looks around and pines away for the things that you don't have, then I hope this lesson will be helpful for you. But if this doesn't resonate with you, I would venture to guess that there are probably a few of you right now who, if I asked you the question, are you content? You would say, yes. Yes, I'm content. And I would venture to guess that that comes with maturity, that comes with age and wisdom, and you're to be commended for that. And throughout this lesson, I want you to ask yourself one important question. If you feel content, if you are satisfied with your life, what could I take away from you? What could be taken away from you, either forcibly or otherwise, that would take you from a place of contentment to a place of discontentment? Is there something that could be removed from your life that would cause you no longer to be content? And if there is something that could be removed from your life that would cause you no longer to be content, then I am going to assert this morning that your contentment is not lasting. And your contentment is not based on things which remain. Because what happens if you lose your job? Will you still be content? What happens if you lose your home or your car? What happens if you lose your health? What happens if you lose that close relationship that you have with a friend? What happens if your children are struggling and going through great difficulty? Will you still be content? So that's a question I want you to ask yourself this morning, because I want us all to be content. I want us all to be satisfied and to be happy. I do. But I want us to be satisfied and content in the right things and in things that last. And so that's what we're going to talk about this morning. And we really could talk all about Paul's writings, as Paul talks about the subject of contentment extensively. We could look at the book of James and talk about it from there. We could obviously look at Jesus' mountain message and talk all about contentment as he lays it out before us. How to be content, how to be satisfied. We could even go back to the writings of Solomon in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes as he, in great detail, exhaustively talks about how to be content. What is the secret of life? What is the purpose of life? What I want to do this morning is focus on one character in one period of time in his life and in one psalm that he wrote, and that's Psalm 34, and this is David. Don't turn to Psalm 34. I know you've already turned to Psalm 34. It's on the board. We're going to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 20 first. So if you will please turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 20. I knew you were going to do that because I put it on the board. 1 Samuel chapter 20. And what I want to do here is see how David is content in Psalm 34. He is happy. He's satisfied. But by all accounts, he has no reason to be. He has zero reason to be content. He has zero reason to write anything he writes in Psalm 34 from a human, physical standpoint. Very few of the Psalms provide us with backstory about the context surrounding them. But this psalm in Psalm 34 talks about a series of events that take place here in 1 Samuel, beginning in chapter 20, into 21, and then into 22. And if you're interested in studying these things later on throughout the week, I'd encourage you to. It's a great story. I think a lot of us know it pretty well. But David is not in a good place. Saul, the king, has already tried to kill him a couple times. And fearing his life, he decides that he needs to find out one last time if Saul actually wants to kill him. And so his best friend in the whole world, Jonathan, Saul's son, basically goes and inquires of his father, "Do you still want to kill David?" And Saul does, extremely so. And so David shoots the arrow past his messenger boy, which indicates to David, who's hiding behind a pile of rocks, "You better get out of here." But before he leaves, David and Jonathan, the closest of friends, knit at the soul, they hug each other. David is weeping. It says that he is crying even more in verse 41 of chapter 20. Jonathan tells him to go. And so David goes, and he goes to a city called Nob, and he meets there a priest named Ahimelech. Now, David has nothing. Nothing. Normally, David goes out with a band of men. He has no one. Normally, David goes out with provisions. David has nothing. Normally, David goes out with a weapon. David has nothing. And so he goes to Nob. And he asks the priest there, Ahimelech, if he can have some food. And Ahimelech eventually offers him the consecrated bread. There's a whole story behind that we're not going to get into. He shouldn't have eaten that bread, but he did. Ahimelech also offers him Goliath's sword as protection. And so before he leaves, he notices a man named Doeg, who is an Edomite, and he thinks nothing of Doeg seeing him, but Doeg will eventually become important in the story a little bit later. David then goes to a city called Gath. Now, for those of you unfamiliar, Gath is one of the five prominent cities of the Philistines. Gath was the city that Goliath was from. Gath was also the city that many of the giants of that time were from. And so David, in seeking refuge from Saul, goes to Gath. And Achish, there, the king, recognizes him. Wait a second, hold on. Aren't you the one who they sing those songs about? Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. And David becomes greatly afraid. He is afraid so much, in verse 12, David took these words to heart. In verse 21, chapter 21, he took these words to heart, was much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath, so he changed his behavior before them and pretended to be insane in their hands and made marks on the doors of the gate and let his spittle run down his beard. Basically, he goes into crazy mode and he acts as if he's insane because his defense mechanism in that moment was, I cannot be found out to be this David. I've got to fix this situation. And so he acts crazy. He's writing all over the walls. He's got spit running everywhere. Finally, Achish, the king, is like, I want nothing to do with you. Get out of here. And so David leaves. David goes to a cave, and eventually he's met by 400 of his friends and people who are frustrated about the situation of the nation. They come to his aid and are with him in the cave. But then we find out that Saul, through this Doeg guy, the Edomite, discovers that David had been there with the priests in Nob. And so Saul kills 85 of those priests, all but one. And Abiathar, the priest, escapes and goes to David and tells him about all the things that happened. And I want you to read here in chapter 22 and verse 22. David said to Abiathar, I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house. Stay with me. Do not be afraid. For he who seeks my life seeks your life. With me you shall be in safekeeping. Now, in the context of David's life, the fact that he is able to say this with such confidence, you stay with me, it'll be safe here. And that leads us to Psalm 34. So please turn there to Psalm 34. And we're going to consider here David's words about contentment. How can you be so content in such great trial and affliction and difficulty? Well, David is going to lay out five keys. And we're going to look at these five and we're going to make some application. But let's read the first seven verses. And I will not be able to do as well as Elliot. I want him to read all of my verses for me forever and ever. Psalm 34, and we will read verses 1 through 7. It says, of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech. Now, wait a second. Abimelech? Well, who's Abimelech? Well, Abimelech is Achish's other name. He's the same guy. And so, of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech so that he drove him out and he went away. So that's the context surrounding this psalm. Verse 1. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord and he answered me and delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all of his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. Stop here and you just get a picture of a man who is, he's pretty content. He's pretty satisfied with his life. He's pretty happy at this point. How can somebody be so content? How can somebody be so confident and assured and at peace with where he is? Well, let's go on. In verses 8 through 10. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack. The young lions suffer want and hunger, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. And that is the first key to contentment. David understood, as a man of war, he understood the value of refuge. He understood the value of a safe place, a place of comfort, a place of care, a place to go when things are difficult and troubling. He understood it so much that He knew that he didn't have refuge in Jerusalem. He didn't find refuge in Gath there with Achish. Where did he find refuge? In God. He found refuge in God. He found refuge in a God who is able to protect him and care for him and provide for him no matter what the circumstances in his life. David sought refuge in God and looked to him for care and protection. And my question for you is, where do you seek refuge? Do you seek refuge and care and comfort and protection in all of the things that you pile up around yourself, in all of the material possessions that you own? Do you seek refuge and comfort and protection in the relationships that you have with other people? I tell you, those things are going to fail. They're going to fall away. They're going to be taken. They're going to be destroyed. You can't serve God and money or materialism. You can't serve God and heap up for yourself these pleasurable experiences in your life. Your major and main primary source of refuge needs to be in God. God needs to be the one to provide for you. He needs to be the one who you always look for to provide for you in all things. Why? He says, "Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack." You might look around and say, I'm lacking something. Everyone else seems to have more than I do. I'm not in a good spot. If you take refuge in God, you have no lack. And he means that literally. You have no lack when you take refuge in God. Now let's move on here to the second point that he talks about. He talks about fear. He says, "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack." Those who fear him have no lack. David feared God. Now, it's a different kind of fear. That's why the word on the board is reverence. But I'm going to just lay this out here. David feared Saul, and it caused him to run away. He feared Achish, and it caused him to run away. But David feared God, and it caused him to run toward God. It caused him to want a relationship with God. It caused him to draw nearer and nearer to him, not further and further away. We need to fear God like David feared God. We need to honor him and revere his name. We need to believe that he is the God that we studied about as Don led us in his lesson today. That he is the God who is impartial, who loves us, who has standards for us. And if we don't meet those standards, we will suffer the consequences for it. And David talks about those consequences here in this psalm. But we need to trust that God, who created everything, is watching us and has expectations for us. And if we fear him and revere him and respect him the way that we should, we will have no lack. I love verse 10. "The young lions suffer want and hunger." My dogs are the young lions here. In my mind, that's them. They suffer want. They suffer hunger. That's what they always are. But those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. When you start looking around with this fear of missing out at everyone who has everything else that you don't, understand that you lack no good thing if you fear God. You lack no good thing if you fear God. And so, we need to come to God as our source of comfort and care and refuge. We need to fear him. But then he goes on in verses 11 through 18 to lay out the third key of contentment. Let's read verses 11 through 18. "Come, O children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is there who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears toward their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all of their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saved the crushed in spirit." David starts out in verse 11 by basically giving a master class on what it means to fear God. Fear God, I think, is kind of a nebulous term. You know, we just talked about fearing God, respecting Him, revering His name. But what does that mean? What does it mean to fear God? Come, O children, listen to me. I love that. It's like we're sitting at the feet of David, and he's given us this wisdom. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is there who desires life and loves many days, that he may see good? That's the whole premise of this lesson. Are you somebody who loves life and wants to see many good days? Are you somebody who wants to find contentment in this life? This is the secret. And it's to fear God enough to the point where it changes your life. Verse 13, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. David understood in his life that fearing God means changing his life, changing his words, changing his actions, and changing the very way that he perceives the world around him. David was not going to be the man after God's own heart that he needed to be, even though he had done nothing, and he was suffering great lack at this point. He was not going to be pleasing in the eyes of God if he lashed out verbally against Saul, if he took evil actions against Saul to try to take him down and get retribution. That would not have been a man who sought peace. But David was a man who sought peace with even those who hated him and wanted to kill him. Well, that's nice. David was somebody who discovered that he needed to act the way that God wanted him to act. With this fear of God, with this respect of God, with this reverence that he had for God, knowing that God would care for him and take care of him, it caused him to change his life into a life of righteousness, understanding the fact that the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous and the ears are toward his cry. If David wanted this refuge from God, he had to be upright. He had to walk upright in the sight of God. How about you? Do you allow the fear of God that you have to change the way you live? Do you allow the fear of God to change the words that you use? To change the actions that you participate in? To change even the way that you view other people who might hate you and persecute you? Do you live in a way in this world that is upright? If you want refuge from God, if you truly fear Him and respect Him and revere Him, then your life, it will be visible in your life. It will be seen in your life as a life of righteousness. Let me tell you a story about Ashlyn. So, a couple weeks ago, we had a knock on the door. There were some Baptists at the door, and they were talking to us about what they believed. And, you know, I was preparing for this lesson, so I said, well, you know, they were trying to explain about how once we're saved, we're always saved, kind of going off of Don's lesson this morning. I said, well, you know, what about 1 Corinthians chapter 5 when Paul's talking about this sinning brother who needs to change? And what about Psalm 34 as David's talking about righteousness here? What about Psalm 15 as David is laying out the whole understanding of what it means to even be righteous in the sight of God? What about righteousness and all these things? How does that fit in? And the conversation wasn't getting anywhere. Eventually, at some point, they left. And I turned around, walked in the house, and Ashlyn says, you know, if I love my mom and dad, I'm going to do what they say. I need to let her answer the door. I mean, it's true. If we love God, if we fear Him, if we come to Him for our source of comfort, it will be seen and evident in our lives. And we'll obey Him. Not based on the fact that we've done all these great things, will we receive heaven someday? But it's our response to all the wonderful things that God is doing for us to live righteously before Him, because His eyes are toward the righteous. And that leads us to our fourth key to the contentment. There's a relationship that we enjoy with God when we are righteous. And David experienced this relationship. He says in verse 15. The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous. His ears are toward their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all of their trouble. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saved the crushed in spirit. David had lost his closest friendship with Jonathan. He had to leave. He was on the run. He had nothing. He had no one with him. For one of the first times in his entire life, he had nothing. And he was in danger of his own life, though he had done nothing wrong. And who was always there, hearing, seeing, and being near to David? It was always God. God was always there with David. And David acknowledged that. You are hearing me, you are seeing me, and you are near to me when I am brokenhearted. Do we acknowledge that? Or do you value earthly relationships more than you value a relationship with God? Do you value the closeness that you share with a spouse, the closeness that you share with your children, the closeness that you share with other members in this church? Do you value these relationships more than you value a relationship with God? Because I hate to say it, these relationships will fail. These relationships will fail. Friends will die. People who we thought were so close to us will abandon us. And will you still have that close relationship with God throughout everything? Or will you, like some people do, shake your fist at God and blame him for what he has done or what is going on in your life? You know, that's not something that David did here. David didn't blame God. David didn't blame God that he was on the run, fearing for his life. David understood that he had a relationship with God. God was there with him. God cared about him, and he was never going to leave him. Do you believe the same thing? Do you acknowledge that God, if a relationship with God is so powerful that no matter what is taken away from you, no matter what is removed from your life, no matter what we lose or go through, you never have to give up comfort and happiness and satisfaction knowing that God cares about you and he loves you? And that's hard to remember in the moment, I think. It's really hard to remember in the moment. But we need to remember that. No matter what happens to us, God is always there, and he's not going anywhere. And so this leads us to our fifth key to contentment, and that's in verses 19 through the end of the psalm. Verse 19, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers them out of them all. He keeps all his bones. Not one of them is broken. Affliction will slay the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be condemned. The Lord redeems the life of his servants. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. The fifth key to contentment that David lays out is redemption. Because listen, it might sound like David is just blind at this moment. He has nothing. His relationship with Jonathan is severed. The fact that he's had to leave his home, the fact that he's on the run and in danger for his life. It may sound like he's blind at this moment, but he's not. Because he has hope in something that he cannot see. He has hope that is in something that is in the future. And that is redemption. That is to be bought back by God. Bought out of all of the trouble and difficulty. And look at what he says in verse 19. Does God promise us a life of great luxury and material possessions? Did Jesus say there in the Sermon on the Mount that ask and every monetary blessing will be given to you? No. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers them out of them all. A life of service to God, a life seeking refuge in him, a life of reverent fear to him, a life of righteousness before him, a relationship with God will mean that we go through affliction, that we go through trouble, expect it and be ready for it, because it will happen. Many are those afflictions, but the Lord redeems the life of his servants. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. For us, as David understood this, do you understand this? Do you understand that a life of service to God is going to be troubling, difficult? And though you may never experience physical happiness and satisfaction on this earth, though you may never have all those things that everyone else around you has, what do you have in Jesus Christ? Redemption. You have a home that will last so much longer than this one. You will have relationships that will never end. Most importantly, you will be in the presence of God for all time. Do not forget that. When you go through troubles, when you go through difficulties, even when times are good, don't forget the redemption that is promised to those who are faithful. And that brings me a lot of contentment. Take out your songbooks and turn to the number that's been announced. There is a fear of missing out, but I say, fear and miss nothing. Fear God and miss nothing. You don't have to miss out on these physical pleasures of this earth. You miss nothing when you fear God, and that fear causes within you a life of righteousness and dedication, a relationship between you and God through Jesus Christ, and you will have redemption. If you do not have a relationship with Jesus this morning, if you do not have a relationship with God the Father this morning through his Son, you will miss out, and you should be afraid. I don't want you to miss out. And I don't want you to be the kind of person who fills your life with all the physical pleasures of this life and doesn't make your riches abound in heaven on your account. I want you to be the kind of person who dedicates your life to the Lord. And if you're ready to do that this morning, we will baptize you. And we'll walk alongside you on that journey and help you in whatever ways that we can. If you're somebody here who needs the prayers of this congregation because you've left the Lord's side, you want us to pray for you, we'll definitely do that. Please come as we stand and sing.